Welcome to a new episode of Metal Minds, the Pit Unplugged, the Metal.de podcast. My name is Diana Heinbohr and I will guide you as usual through today's pit. Here we talk about music, what it means and everything that happens in between. Some bands just play music. A few inspire courage. Today I'm joined by two people who do both. The Iron Roses create music that's both loud and gentle. It's angry, but also joyful. They sing about tough topics most people avoid and somehow make you want to dance at the same time. Their music makes space for you to be yourself, messy, tired, hopeful, or anything else. This is our third conversation, and each time it feels not like an interview and more like catching up with old friends. We talked about resistance, love, mental health, sobriety, and finding the courage to be yourselves. So this isn't just about a record, it's a conversation with people I care about who keep choosing bravery. Their new album Molotov Nights comes out worldwide on August the 6th. It has 10 songs made on their own terms with heart and plenty of rage. I'm truly honored to welcome Ned and Becky. Thank you both for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Good to see you again.
So it's our third time. And before we start, how are you today as Ned and Becky, not as a band, just as individuals?
Tired.
Yeah, it's hard to separate.
Yeah.
Not as a band and who we are. We're in the middle of just a lot of exciting things, a lot of exciting announcements as the band. So that's kind of taking up a lot of life space and energy right now.
There's a lot of preparation, a lot of things to do. So, tired.
But happy.
But good. Yeah. It's all good things. It's not like we're getting worn down with bad things. So that's, wonderful.
Yeah. I said it last week to my daughter. She also said she's tired, and I look at her and said to her, but you are happy. It's okay to be tired and happy. Okay. So let's talk about the new album Molotov Nights. You wrote that you would rather not have needed Molotov Nights at all, that you would have rather a world with food, housing, healthcare, peace. So when did you feel this album still had to come out?
Well, because we don't have all those things. And so for us, I mean, it is not a compulsion, but it's something that we feel that we need to do. We also feel that we need to put our own spin on it and have our own way of saying it. Because obviously we're not all doom and gloom all the time. We have something to say and we're very serious about what we have to say, but we also want to help people have fun and dance and be joyful in the moment while also realizing that they're very serious topics that still need to be addressed, and that it is, although we hope it to not be too overwhelming, it sucks that there's things that activists have been speaking out on, musicians have been speaking out on, for decades and centuries that are still problems today that we can't seem to get on top of. So,
And you call it a labor of love and rage. Where was there more love this time, and where more rage? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that we certainly were very specific about topics on this album that maybe we hadn't been so much prior, where we were calling out specific problems or specific needs, that society has around us, or specific barriers that we see. And so some of those things, like with our first, single Dead Eyes, like it deserves to be called out directly, the things that we're talking about. And it's, while we always want to maintain some joy in what we do, it's very difficult to talk about some things without having rage as that center. As we always do, I think the way that we deliver the topics that we're speaking to is in the idea that if we do not allow ourselves to be like the other side where that is all we exist in. We only exist in rage. We are out to make other people miserable because we are miserable ourselves. Then we can wrap the songs in love, in joy, and it can be both things. I think there's a million bands out there that are probably talking about similar topics. Maybe not as many as there should be, but maybe they're just saying it in a much more aggressive way that not everybody can consume, or maybe get the message as it's received because it's not presented in a way that speaks to them. So there's a balance there for sure.
And love and rage are not mutually exclusive. They can be part of the same thing. They can be part of the same feeling and emotion.
They have to be, or else.
Yeah, I
think so. Yes. And the last time that we saw us, we talked about your last EP, and there it was very important to publish fast the new songs. Now it's not a year later, and you're going to publish a new album. I think this was very fast. You do it. So
we are old, and we have to get things moving a lot quicker than most bands.
Or maybe the kids grown up, and we realize that we have more time. Okay, but what changed in how you feel about timing, despite the age?
Well, I mean, the EP that you're referencing, those are songs that we wrote kind of in the same cycle of writing for the songs that ended up being on the album that we're releasing now. So I wouldn't really say that they were kind of independent of each other, or more of like a step forward. But we knew that we wanted to kind of get a few songs out last year to kind of start reintroducing ourselves, or maybe introducing, you know, who we are becoming to our fans and the world around us.
There's a lot there's a lot of truth in what I said about how we're an older band, we're older people, and getting things out quicker is time is of the essence at the moment, because a lot of bands, I don't think many people realize that. I heard a great quote that it takes 10 years to make an overnight success. You know, so when you see these bands just all of a sudden blow up out of nowhere, they're not blowing up out of nowhere. They've been working hard for 10 years. We don't have 10 years to work, you know? So we are pushing a lot quicker on what we're doing, but also at the same time, it's coming natural. It's not forced. It's just that we're writing. We have a lot to say. We have a lot to prove, I guess. And so it just sort of comes as it comes.
Yeah. I also think you have so much to say. There are so much you want to bring out. And so it's a very natural process to let it out.
Yes.
Don't stop.
Yes.
Okay, Molotov Night sounds in some ways harder than anything before. Ned, I think you came up with the term celebratory escapism, a party on stage while everything burns outside. How that this turns into your new music?
I guess it floats pretty well into what we're doing, but there's definitely a... From the first album we put out to the EP to now, it's been a progression, and we've been really trying to find, okay, who are we as a band? Like, you can mess around with all different styles and inspirations and yada, yada, but at some point you have to come to a consensus on what you are as a band. And I really think that's what this album is us finally going, there it is. Finding the rage and the joy and the love and the pain and the anger all in one wrapping. Yeah. And what was really fun, I think, on this album, we've obviously experimented a lot in the past with like ska and reggae and things like that underneath that punk stuff. And in this one, I feel like we brought the punk more to the forefront is what we did. And so it gives it a bit more of an aggressive sound. It gives, because we were never really a ska band or a reggae band. We were just a punk band that had influences, you know? And so we're bringing, I guess, who we are more to the forefront on this album. And that's been really cool to like realize.
Yeah. I think for me, the new record sounds exactly like the Iron Roses should sound.
I agree. Yes. Yeah.
So we have the collective crown in every song, and then we have the I don't know how I can express this. So many facets, so many different shapes of the music in the songs. They are so different. And in one song, I think I hear some country music. Do you hear too?
Yes.
Yeah. That's like, that was, I think, the fun part about writing for this is like, we have, you know, a group of individuals who all have our own musical backgrounds and interests, but we also have, you know, some things that we all have in common. And so from the sound perspective, it was like kind of putting everything in, and we really didn't say no to any ideas as long as they made sense in the collection of songs for the album. Like, it couldn't be something that was really, really good, but didn't fit with the album.
Yeah.
We were very conscious about making sure that everything worked together, but there's 100% very fast influences. There's, you know, a little bit of hardcore. I would say I know exactly the part that
Of course, like a folk country thing.
Yeah, like there's a lot of different things in there, but it's still very us, because we are a lot of different things.
It's funny because I definitely, for me, not for everybody else, but for me, I reached into my past in like with Boys That's Fire's Note from the Plague Years, which I came to the band with an idea that they had also sort of come with, where it's just like, let's just go for it. You know what I mean? And that's sort of what that album in the past was. And I wanted to recapture that feel where it's a group of people doing music, not doing a genre per se or doing a certain style or trying to fit in, but just going, well, is it a good song? Then let's do it, you know, and then allow whatever to come forth from that. And that's what this album was. And it's cool that, you know, certain things from my past were able to have an influence in that. And then all these new things and everyone else in the band having their own past, present, and future being involved in that and seeing what comes from it was awesome.
Yeah. It's funny that you addressed the Boys That's Fire topic, because by listening to the album, I think that I hear some references to Boys That's Fire. Especially
you'll hear in anything I do, because I was part of that, you know.
Especially at the intros, introducing parts of the songs, and I think to myself, no, you can't say this, but you addressed it, and so I want to say this.
No, absolutely, you can. I think it's cool because everybody gets to bring in their thing to this. Thing is, it's going to have that influence because that was me for 30 years, you know, and I was part of that. That wasn't music that I wasn't part of, you know, so it makes sense that there's going to be me bringing in that influence a little bit into what we do. But then what's cool is to get to hear that layered with Becky, Pedro, Devin, you know what I mean? Like, putting in their part, and I'm going to hear this whole new take on a style of music that is very politically and socially conscious, and does have that part from from me, but it also has all these other things involved. And it's just a really cool movement forward, I think, all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And it shows how dedicated you are to your music. And that's something personal. Yeah. Music is something personal, I think. Yeah. No, quite cool. And also the other stuff in this way is that I know the first time we talked about it was for you, Ned, very important that Becky is on your side, because Becky is an important part. And I think if I compare the first album with this new album, I see that Becky, you get really an important part in singing, and you are not longer the person in the back. You are the same value. There's
equal footing. Yeah, all of us. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, it's so good to hear it in the music. It's make fun to hear it, and it's
thank you.
Yeah, it's a very good feeling to listen to it. Yeah. Okay. So back to my questions. Yes. You are growing as a band, and I think I don't know it exactly, but I think you worked on the new stuff in a different way, maybe with more people, or?
I mean, yes and no, because by the time we got to the studio, you know, the kind of core four of us were the people that wrote on it. Mm-hmm. So all of the main writers are here.
Mm-hmm. From the EP to now.
Oh, for this album itself.
Like, oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. yep. I mean, we're really talking about Molotov Night. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what do you think? How does the process changed by thinking, maybe by thinking about that you said, Ned said before, you don't want to be the boss of something again. So how can I imagine your writing process?
Yeah. So it's fun because everybody has their lane to be in. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's sort of what the cool part of this is everybody's sort of the boss of their own lane. And we come together, and that works out really well. Like, I do a lot of the foundational writing, obviously with everyone's help, but like I get to sort of be the boss of that, like just the foundation of it. Whereas Becky does pretty much all the business end of things that you see, and the social media and all that. That's all Becky. She does all. I stay far out of that shit because I do not get it. I don't understand it, you know? And then like, Pedro usually takes a lot of the foundational writing and then makes it an Roses song. You know what I mean? Like, cause we'll put stuff together, and if you heard some of like the foundational versions of these songs, you'd be like, what the hell is that? But we all hear it. You know what I mean? We're like I can send it to Pedro. He's like, I gotcha. And then he puts like real guitars and drums and stuff to it, and like makes it, you know. And then we get into the studio, and Devin puts his drum on, you know, we take the computer draw off. He puts the real stuff on, like, there it is. There's the song, you know? But even, I mean, even with that, even with the songwriting, everybody has such a part in that.
Everything kind of goes into the pile.
Yeah.
Like little scraps of ideas, and, you know, we'll pull them out and mm-hmm. work on things like as they kind of spark something. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, Nat will sit in the dining room and plug away on a guitar, just making noise for 2 days before something comes out. Or sometimes she and I will sit down at the table and like
argue.
Yeah. Set out time to try to create. And sometimes sometimes things come of it, and sometimes they don't, but,
My favorite times, honestly, since we're talking about the new album and this new single that just came out with Body Count, one of my favorite songs on the album, because it was one of those ones where Becky was like, you need to push what you're doing. Like, stop writing the same fucking song. You know, like try this, you know, because I'll get stuck in a rut and I'll just keep writing the same thing over and over and over again until I find the best version of that. But that song is not in my wheelhouse. Like when I was writing it, like it was just like, I don't know. She's like, she comes in like, we need this and we need this. You know what I mean? And you need to get to this point. Like, all right. And she does that a lot with writing and helps me out a lot where it's like, she'll come in with an idea of what a song sort of needs to sound like, what it should feel like, all that. And then like, go. Like, fuck. You know? And I'll try to. But with Body Count, it was so cool because it was like, once it started rolling, like she ran upstairs. She's like, that. Okay. Let's keep going. And like, we're going. And I'm like, and it's a proud moment when you're able to break away from, and when it's because you're sharing an experience, it's not just one writer writing everything and like, that's a song, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, there's such a shared experience, and that's just been a really cool thing for this because it's pushed me to write things that I would never write in my life. It's forced me to do harmonies that I'm not used to, her to do melodies that she's not used to. And just like, you know what I mean? We've really pushed each other to do new things. And I think it's really worked out.
That's quite cool to hear it because sometimes I talk to musicians and the perspective from the outside, what you give each other, they get from the producer. And you have it in your band.
We are.
Yeah. I defy anyone to come in and try to produce us. Good Lord. No, we've already gone through like 10 stages of that. I think the only time I have ever gotten outside advice is from Brian, Brian McTernan. And every once in a while, I'll send him something like, does this sound right? Because I don't trust our viewpoint right now on this, you know. And that's the only time I bet we really trust anyone outside of us. I don't think we could work with a producer.
Yeah,
we have like a place that we get to with songs. Like if it doesn't make us cry or just feel invincible. Mm-hmm. It goes on. Like we kind of have a threshold for ourselves. Like we know when a song is there or a song needs to just be kind of given up on. So that's how
we've got probably about 20 trash songs that didn't make it on this album. And we've honestly got about 5 to 10 songs that are pretty good that didn't go on this album because they're pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
And if they come back later and they become special, great. But I'm not interested, and I know the rest of us aren't interested in putting anything on an album that's not special or necessary. What's the point?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you said it, I remember that I have a few days ago, I speak with my son. My son is listening to all the Michael Jackson songs, and he is really dedicated to Michael Jackson the moment. And the songs we look at every detail and then he sit down and said to me, Mom, I ask myself if Michael Jackson have songs that were not published. And then I said to him, sure, he will have songs he not published, because if you have an album, then maybe in this time you have 10 or 12 songs on it. Years ago, it was around 20 songs. And this is the essence. But you have a lot of more, maybe 100 songs or more you wrote, you experimentate to find this essence, what you want to publish. And of course, there were songs they are unpublished. But it's important, I think. So I really think many people outside don't understand what it means to be creative, to write songs, because they go and buy the record and think, okay, there was a musician, he sit down and write 10 songs and these are the 10 songs.
Right. Yeah. Those wouldn't be albums worth listening to.
No.
You know, it's funny how many times I've like written something and I think it's amazing and I'll run in here and like, listen to this. What about this? And she goes, Yeah, I mean, that's good. Mike, fuck it, never mind. You know? Okay, back to the drawing board.
Yeah. Okay, but your family is getting bigger. You have new members in your, I think, in your touring company, but also as band members, or?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so we just brought in Kate, who is playing bass for us full time now, which is really exciting. She came on the road with us in Canada last month. Mm-hmm. Was that last month?
Yeah, last month.
Crazy. and we knew right away that she was going to be kind of a forever person for us. She has incredible energy. She is just, as a person, like,
she's a sweetheart. She's wonderful. Yeah. And on stage, she has a very stoic rock and roll presence.
She's awesome.
Yeah, it was funny because we were just talking about this in a group text, and I'll make it more concise. But it's funny when you know. And she was one of those people. Like, I mean, before we hadn't even met her really in person, but the second we got on the road, it was like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
This is it. Like, you know? Yeah. So.
Yeah. Okay, now it's wonderful to see that your family, your touring company gets bigger and that it fits so good.
Yeah.
It's been such a work in progress throughout the years of, you know, some people didn't work. And I mean, and I don't say that in the way of talking shit or anything like that. It just didn't work. And I think it's very hard when you're people like us to find your people and the people that are as, I don't want to say dedicated, because they may be dedicated, but not to this, you know? So finding other people who have the same mentality towards the Iron Roses and what we want and what we're doing, because you can't force that. And that's what we've realized, is that in a lot of ways, we've wanted people more than they wanted to be here. So after a while, that wears thin, you know? And now we're only accepting people in who want it as badly as we do and understand to the full extent
what that means
and how hard it is and what a struggle it is to make this work. So Kate was the next step, and we will at some point bring in a second guitarist whenever we find them. And until then, we're just going to keep looking and trying people out until it works. But so far, me, Becky, Kate, Pedro, and Devin are it. That's ride or die.
Okay, then let's have a closer look to the music and the songs on the record of Molotov Nights. Mm-hmm. We talked about already about some country music influences. But also from a musical perspective, quite interesting is the song Good News. It remembers me on the one hand on Fireplace Romantics, I would say. And on the other hand, I was thinking, in my head, it blobs up. It was there, I think, on Good Riddance from Green Day. Why ever? But
That would be Pedro. Probably influence sneaking through.
Yeah.
The song remembers me on something like on feeling lost but finding my way, I think. So maybe you can tell us about something more about the song Good News.
Mm-hmm. That was a fun one, because I think out of all the songs on the album, it's strangely the more complex song on the album, where it's just, there's a lot going on. You know, it's not just verse, chorus, bridge, end. You know, it's very like, stop. No, it's coming back. Oh, it's going, it's coming back, you know? And it was fun to mess around in what the song was telling us to do. You know, there's like that sort of folk, almost country feel to it. It gets big. The goes into some reggae parts. It's like, you know, all over the place, but it's also a fun song to have because of the topic. Mm-hmm. And that good news, obviously being about at some point, evil people will pass.
Yeah.
And they will go away because that's how nature works. And obviously it's directed at Trump, which with all the health problems he's been having recently, we keep going, just hold on till August.
Yeah.
That's all. We just need him to hold on till August. you can't go before the song comes out. but it's fun because it's like, it's speaking to what you were saying earlier about the diversity of the album. That's part of that diversity in the album and something that I hope that we're able to hold on to. And to keep within our like 3 to 4 styles or ways that the Iron Roses put songs together.
There's it's funny because we obviously take what we do very seriously and we're very passionate about what we do, but there's nothing worse than a band that takes themselves so seriously in the way of where like they want this one label. And so everything sounds like this.
Yeah.
Each song sounds exactly the same. And I think the way that we allow ourselves to be a bit playful with our songwriting is what makes our sound our sound. And I just can't imagine being a band that just puts out the same exact song.
Also being open to ideas in the middle of writing and when songs are done. That song, Becky, that song didn't start out with the acoustic thing.
Yeah.
That song just started out right into it like we normally do. And then Becky was like, can we try this? You know, like,
I thought they would tell me no.
Yeah, this sort of almost country campfire feel.
Yeah.
And we did it and was like, nailed it. We're keeping that, you know. So that's how that the opening and like towards the end and stuff came about, because Becky was like, let's go further with this. Yeah.
I really liked the song, and also as you said, it's not a typical beginning of a song. Even in these times, it's not a typical beginning. We need the don't catch at the first 3 seconds, but there's the attendance is there. You want to discover the song. You want to know what's next. How does the song go?
I also love that Pedro put that. It's like a cassette tape going in.
I love that.
Because normally, and I had suggested it, I was like, you know, maybe we could put that sort of record scratch feel in it. And he was like, so many fucking bands do that. Yeah. So he was trying to think of something different. So you can hear in the beginning before we do that sort of rough. And that's just me, Becky, and Pedro and Devin, I think, in a room,
standing in a room,
singing it without it. So then when it pops in, it gets more produced, you know. But Pedro has that, like, it sounds like someone's putting a cassette tape in and hitting play. And then at the end of it, you take out the cassette tape. It's fun.
So fun.
Yeah.
And by listening to it, so I some old songs come up in my head. Also, Michael Jackson do it in this way. He also have some songs where he start very slow, like someone is turning something on, and so and then
it
comes. Yeah, it's quite cool that you do it in this way. <So. laughs> Okay, Dead Eyes was your first single. Ned, you said the song shows the real logic of war. It's money. And I think you also quoted Tupac on the idea that there is money for wars, but not to feed poor. Why was this song why you choose the song to open the door?
Because we really wanted to lead with a more aggressive sound and lead with some, but still dancey, you know what I mean? It's that chorus is almost disco.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's like,
but every song, you know? Every song on this record is still danceable.
Yes. Love that. But we wanted to like make sure that we weren't every first song was coming out with the fast sort of melodic punk with a little ska breakdown type of thing. Because Screaming for a Change, Class War, both have that feel. And obviously there are songs like that on the album, like All American and stuff like that. And Molotov Nights even. But we really wanted to lead. I feel like in the past when I've tried to, like with the solo stuff with Rebel Songs, tried to break out into new styles, like adding reggae and stuff into stuff, I was advised to lead with what people know. And that was always a mistake because people then go, oh, well, it's just another one of these albums. Mm. So that was something that I know we sat around, but was very important to me that we didn't lead with the same song again. That is obviously our style. We have that. But also these new styles like with Dead Eyes and Look Away that has almost this like fast, like Bad Religion thing that with the hardcore drops and stuff, like we want that to be part of us too. And if you don't hit people with it immediately, they'll just go to what they know, you know? Yeah. So that was important to us. But also the topic is very timely, and it's something that needs to be talked about because I feel this topic especially gets shied away from because it's so divisive in many ways. And it wasn't for so long until the topic of Gaza, the topic of Israel and Palestine gets brought into it. But it's no different than any other topic of war and the money that goes into that and the villains who line their pockets with death. So it was very important to us to pick, you know, draw a line in the sand and say, this is where we stand on these topics, no matter who is involved, no matter what kind of narrative you try to set up behind it, this is wrong. And the people who are creating that death and who are monetizing graves are wrong. And we must stand up against it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. At the moment, I'm reading again some dystopias and some utopias to find a solution. it's quite philosophical.
Philosophical. Yes.
Hard word. But sometimes it feels like for me that all the dystopias we have read in the last years or for so many years, they become reality. And so I ask myself which utopias we need to push forward to find a way out. Mm-hmm. But I'm still searching.
Well, it seems a constant cycle, doesn't it? You know, it's... what we're seeing now isn't new. It's always been, and it goes in cycles over and over and over again. And that's why it gets a little silly when people are like, that's it, we're cooked, it's over. Well, not really. We've been here. Like, and you can trace it back throughout history where these things happen. But what a wonderful way to look at it, though, from that, like, okay, we've been living these dystopias. How do we live the utopia? We look at that more than
sometimes
there you go. Kick out the patriarchy, introduce the matriarchy.
Reintroduce the matriarchy.
Yes,
at a mass level,
right?
It used to be that, but that's another topic. That's another podcast.
Okay, then let's have a look back to the songs. I also have on my list Fascist lullabies. The song plays with an alphabet nursery rhyme idea and lands on ACAB. How does an image like that come to you, putting something so angry into an almost playful form?
I could tell you exactly. And fortunately, they're an anarchist band, so they won't sue me because it's so obvious to me. But Crass were a huge influence on that song. Big A, Little A was a huge influence in that. And that's, I mean, Crass and Steve Ignorant have been a huge influence on me for most of my punk life, you know? And I think, you know, whether they were, I mean, they were more deconstructionists with music. They, you know, played stuff that to a lot of people is absolutely unlistenable, you know, whereas I loved it, you know? But they played with that a lot, with that anger and that ferocity, but at the same time, a very playfulness. Like if you listen to it, where it's like they're just going at it, and then all of a sudden it's like doot 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 out of nowhere, and it's bands like Crass, it's bands like Chumbawamba, it's bands that with that sort of anarchist, anarcho-communist like mindset from those squat punk days, where like you had these bands that just sort of popped up out of the more serious hive mind, I guess, to do something a bit more creative in our perspective. And those are the bands that we really latched on to with this album and our sound even, and putting ourselves sort of in that ranks. And that was one of those songs where it was like, we can do this. Like we can like make this sound and have it fun. And at the same time, it's a very, probably one of our more straightforward punk songs. So.
Mm-hmm. We talked about Body Count. It was released a few days before. but I also want to address the songs like All American, Look Away. You take on themes many bands avoid. Genocide, Ice, Femicide. Is there a song that made even you swallow hard while writing it?
Hmm.
You said before maybe that Body Count was not easy, but maybe there was a song that was more not easy.
Yeah.
And we'll probably have different experiences with this, because for me, they were all easy to speak to because I feel like I've been choking on needing to say these things for my entire life. Like I am a 47-year-old woman now and really coming into the place of my life where I stop holding my tongue on things that are important to me because I'm afraid of blowback or being made fun of, or that, you know, a lady shouldn't, you know, speak on these things or whatever. And for me, it's like, fuck yes. Like, I can't wait to say all this. Like, we're going to say this. We're going to talk about this. Like, these are all of the things that my entire life I've kept in. And so for me, it's kind of the opposite. Like it was easy to talk about these things because I already knew where I stood on these matters and what they meant to me and what I stood for and didn't. And I just wanted to unleash them, like let it fly.
Yeah. I think for me, there's almost a two-part answer with two different songs. One of the hardest ones to, it wasn't a thing of, can I talk about this? It was, I have been trying to write a song like Rise Up Phoenix for a very long time. Speaking to my own personal experiences being trans and like celebrating that. And I've written that song like 50,000 fucking times and it always comes out not that great, you know? And finally with that song, it was like, okay, good. It's, you know, it's not, there's a lot of times where when you say something very sincerely, but you go back and like, it's a little heavy handed or a little like, you know, I don't know, corny, like, you know, so it's very hard to like speak to things like that sometimes. And so Rise Up Phoenix was one of those, it was like sort of a celebratory moment of cool. It's like a heavy, cool song that like expresses it without being too heavy-handed and weird about it, you know? But I would say that one of the ones that I struggled with on how to speak to it was actually Dead Eyes. And it was because there's such a rift in the issue of Israel and Palestine and what has happened there, and even in what is happening, there, And even within, it's weird, and this is something that I noticed a long time ago, even within the leftist movements of, say, Germany and the US, very different minded on that in many ways. Yeah. I don't know if that's changed much or what, but there has been this like very pro-Israel stance with German leftists, whereas with the US, there's a much more pro-Palestinian stance. And as a band that is global, international, there had to come a point where it was like, we need to stop fucking around here and being concerned that someone's going to think we're bad people because we're on the wrong side. It's really not a discussion anymore. Israel is, it's a genocide against the Palestinian people. We've seen it over and over again, and the US is funding it. And it's disgusting and it's horrible. And if people want to be mad at us about it, it is what it is, you know? So that was one of those things, because I think even for political bands, sometimes you get that like, should we jump into this? Holy fuck, are you kidding me? Have you seen how many people have fucking died? How many children have been bombed and starved to death purposefully? Like, it's just, yeah, I could go on and on. But I feel like it shouldn't be necessary for me to go on and on. We could all see what fucking is happening. You can't stand behind your narrative anymore. You can't stand behind your bullshit anymore. It is plain and simple genocide. Done. So that was important for us to say in that song, and to say not just Sudan and not just Congo and not just hell anywhere at this moment, but to bring up Gaza as well, and to make sure that that was part of what we were singing about, to make sure that people knew where we stood in that. But yeah, that was hard, because there's going to be people who are going to vehemently be upset about that. And they can fuck off, is what it is, you know?
Yes, yeah.
Go write your own weird song about it. I'm out.
Because these people will always be there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's I hope that it helps other people speak out on what they see with their own goddamn eyes and not hold back. Because I think some people need to know that even people like, say, me with a long history of being politically outspoken, or this band, which has a short history, but we've been very politically outspoken, that even we have moments where it's like, can we say it? Should we say it? And then finally go, yes, we need to say it. Yeah, we have to. Yeah. And so I think maybe that could help other people who like, oh, they even struggled? Okay, awesome. So it's not, I think a lot of times we get caught up in our own guilt as well sometimes. It's like, I should have said something sooner. I should have not held back. There's no time like right now. Don't worry about all the time that you haven't said anything. Say it now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you also said it before, that you want you want to with the album, you want to challenge other bands, because some, especially from the scene, are very quiet right now, and so do you want with Molotov Nights to push them a little bit, to encourage them?
I mean,
threaten them.
it's so complicated, because yes, I want that, but I also more importantly want to give let's start here. Many bands have an inherent privilege in the fact that they are mostly made up of cis men. Most white. Of the time cis white men, which that in itself has privilege, and that's a given platform, right? And you have a responsibility to use that. If you're not going to use it, that fucking sucks, but I am not going to force you to use it. I can't shame somebody into doing something that they're not going to do. What we can do is provide music to the people who are passionate about receiving music, going to shows, listening to music, and give them something that they can sing along to that resonates with their ideals.
Yeah.
That they can go to a show to, you know, go to a show of ours and be in community with other people who have the same worldview as them, maybe come from similar communities as them, and be in a space where, like, no matter what happens outside those doors, in here, I know that I am amongst people who care about the things that I do and are, you know, endangered by the similar things as me. And we can have this moment where we're not so alone. So Do I want cis white men and bands to fucking use their voices? Yes. Mm-hmm. But they're not going to do shit that doesn't benefit them in some way.
Yeah.
And so when we're being very realistic here, a lot of those people are not willing to jeopardize their paycheck or their fame for saying the thing out loud that needs to be said, which is why if you look at a lot of the younger bands right now, they're very queer, they're very femme fronted, and they're very not fucking afraid to say a goddamn thing that's on their mind. And we should all look to that as inspiration too. But as far as like other bands, you're going to be a dude and do what you're doing anyway. And you're going to take your other three dude friend bands on the road and play to each other and play the same songs and play to the same fans. And you're never going to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And I can't force you to do that. I would love to try to shame you into do that. But until you feel the way that we feel, you're not going to make a change. And you're never going to feel that.
If you're ever capable of shame.
Right. You can't. Like, I mean, generally speaking, they're never going to feel what we have, that experience that we have, or have the experience that a fucking family in Gaza is having.
Yeah.
So they don't care enough to speak to
it.
But we can provide something to the fans of our music and provide them a space. And I think that is my bigger concern and my bigger ministry in this, I guess.
Yes.
Agree.
It's also my experience that the younger bands are louder. They speak up.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
I love it.
We are so inspired by younger bands coming up than we are by what's past us.
Yeah.
You know, it's
nothing new and fresh happening.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been such a drive and a push for us to not get complacent, to not just
be that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Be the next big thing that doesn't say anything.
Yeah. And sometimes I also ask myself how long I can listen to the old white male bands.
Yeah. Yeah.
How long?
It gets old. It gets real fucking old. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But in this context, I want to address a tricky topic. You decide if you want to answer it. It's about your website. And the last time I was there, I thought the website was sized. Anyone who visits your website right now will see at first this warning. I was wondering about it.
That our website is designed by Devin's husband, who is a web designer. That is what he does for a living. So that is something that we did as a little joke until we flipped over into our new site. So he created that in his living room. He is a coder. He is a designer. That is his profession. So that was created by his own hands.
Yeah. But I think it's... I wouldn't be surprised if it really happens that your website is sized because...
Yeah, I know, right? That's why we did it, right? Because it wasn't that weird, you know? It's like people would see it and go, oh, no, what happened?
Yeah.
It sort of made sense, you know?
So I'm very glad that everything is... All right.
But shit, now it's going to happen and no one's going to believe us. Like, it's going to happen. It's like, no, this is real. Ha ha. Yeah, whatever.
Okay. Awesome. So thank you for sort this out.
Yeah, thank you.
It works.
It works.
When you announced the album, you asked your friends to name one thing they would do in the next 48 hours for themselves or for others. I think that's really good, and that's very important to talk about this topic. And so how do you take care of yourselves right now so that you don't burn out?
I mean, I would say that we are not great at it.
It takes zero precautions. I'm like sitting here like, drink a lot of coffee. Yeah. I don't do anything.
We do try. Like, we have been trying to get out for walks. We went and had dinner by the water yesterday. Like, mm-hmm. the little things that, like, reset us mm-hmm. and get us out. Because, like, right now we're in crazy work mode and there's so much that mm-hmm. needs to be done, you know, inside this computer box for...
Sorry, I burped.
So we get very stuck in this room, in this bubble. So we've been trying mm-hmm. to make sure that we get out of the house or out of this room, you know, get outside. It's a little bit nicer outside mm-hmm. Now and just try to be out of this center of work. Because if we're in the house, we're going to be working. Last mm-hmm. weekend, we went on a hike by some, excuse me, now you made me burp. Waterfalls. We drove a couple hours away and did a hike by some waterfalls. Like mm-hmm. we are trying. It's not always easy, especially when it's like, when there's so many things that need our attention, mm-hmm. you know, right now. But a couple more weeks and we'll be out playing some shows and that will be a thing that we can do.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite important to remember ourselves, to take mm-hmm. care of ourselves.
Yes.
Even in times we are in a very positive flow.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Times before you make a difference between great albums and necessary albums. What is the difference for you and which one is Molotov Nights?
Well, I mean, it's an absolutely necessary album. It's necessary for us. I feel it's necessary for other people and to whomever it gravitates towards. I think that, well, as I was saying earlier, I don't think there's any reason for us to create good or even great albums. I think it's important for us to create necessary and special albums. And so if whatever we're going to put out doesn't feel like that, we won't put it out, mm-hmm. you know? And that's just, I mean, that could be our age talking. Like I was saying, we don't have the time to deal with putting out filler. But at the same time, I think it's just also where we've set our expectations for what music is and what speaks to us. And if it doesn't speak to us in a way that feels important, why? Why even deal with it? What's the point of that? So music is very important and necessary and special to us. So to treat it as anything other would be doing a disservice.
Yeah. It's also...
Go ahead.
No, go on, please.
I was just thinking while she was saying that, like, I think for me, there's like a distinction in like great albums and necessary albums. And I feel like albums that are written, like if we had just written, and this isn't necessarily shitting on other bands and what they're the content about, but just for me personally, I tend to gravitate towards albums that speak to something bigger than themselves. Mm-hmm. Like they speak to more than just like their own personal heartbreak, you know, there's a heartbreak or getting drunk and like going to a party. Like there are great albums that speak to those things, I'm sure. Like, mm-hmm. but is it a necessary album to that artist or is it a necessary album to the world? And I think the distinction is a collection of songs bigger than the six people that created it. Right. And that is where the line is. And so that is something that, you know, I hate using the term brand, but I can't mm-hmm. think of any other term. Like mm-hmm. our purpose as a band is
mission.
Yes. Yeah. Is beyond just us and our personal feelings and our personal healing. Do we heal and grow through what we do? Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. But it is way bigger than just the six of us. And I think that's what makes something necessary in the world, is that it extends beyond us.
That was a better answer.
Perfect.
Yeah, perfect. It's exactly what I feel. It's the music of the Iron Roses is necessary for this world. We need the music from you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So we have known each other for a few talks now, and some things we have shared: depression, sobriety, healing from old wounds. Ned, you now move through the world fully as yourself. And I think it's a lifelong process to become yourself. I think it's so. And when you look back to the first album of the Iron Roses, what would you tell yourself today, or from this point, what would you tell yourself there?
I think there would be a lot of reassurance involved, because right around that time was when I was just first starting to, like, that first self-titled album was when I was first starting, you know, to really come out. And I was more sort of within that non-binary sort of world, like trying to figure it out, or the start of it. And I think, you know, if we went back way further, there would probably be some harsher talks I'd have with myself. but at that moment, I think it'd be more reassurance, just like, you're gonna get it. It's not that hard. You already sort of know, you'll get there. Just keep going, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Becky, you have been sober for so many years now, and Ned is on the road to does that change how you make music about rage? Does rage write differently when you are sober?
I don't know if, like, contextually it changes, but it certainly changes how we approach the band. Like, we joke all the time about there's zero chance that the Iron Roses would be where we are in the world if I was still drinking, or Nat was still drinking, or if we were still drinking together. Yeah, there's no chance.
The band would be dead.
Yeah, because we wouldn't be taking it seriously, or giving it the respect that it deserves, or giving our fans the respect that they deserve, in giving them, you know, the best version of us. And so, like, alcohol's funny, right? Because it's like, we always think that it fixes feelings, but it doesn't even mask feelings. It just mutes them for a tiny bit of time while we're drunk. And then when we wake up the next morning, everything that we felt before we picked up that first drink the night before is, like, magnified by 100. So I certainly, like, I have these books of writings where I had written, you know, while I was drunk, or even when I was younger, like, while I was high. And I always thought I was creating this incredible thing. And then I'll go back and look at it as a sober person and be like, what the fuck is this? Like, I thought I was creating something magnificent, but it's just garbage. Mm-hmm. And so I think the more impactful thing of being artists and being sober is in how we treat the business of the band, or treat what we do with the band, and come at it with, like, our fans deserve this. They deserve us to show up, you know, as healthy in mind and body as we can be, and be there just for them, and not be pretending to be friends with somebody because we're drinking together. Like, that's the worst, is like when you have drinks with somebody and you're, like, best friends, but you know what I mean? Like,
you're just drunk at the same time.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, all of that, not having that be a barrier to any of this is magnificent. And it really makes this a lot more special, because we're just completely in this.
Yeah. I it's probably been three years now. I haven't had a drink in, like, 3 years. But I didn't really have the same experience as, say, Becky did with it, in that it wasn't great for me, but it wasn't as much of a problem. Yeah, I wasn't an addict. It wasn't as much of a problem. But I do remember that I came to a conclusion. Ever since the start of this band, I've always played sober. So one drink, you know what I mean? Even when this band started, I would have one drink, and that was a rule. Like, it was like, before we play, I will not drink, have more than one drink before we play. And that was something that I started quite some time ago, The Boy Sets Fire, because I would get drunk all the time before we played. And then I started listening back and like, oh no, I sound like shit. Like, you know, and like, yeah. And then you're thinking of like the people who had paid not just money, but their time to be there. And you're up there acting like that. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, ugh. So it was quite some time ago that, like, obviously afterwards I'd get loaded, but like before we played, I wouldn't drink because it just wasn't respectful. So it's been nice with this band sort of bringing in a bunch of, I mean, Pedro's the only person in the band that drinks at all.
Yeah.
So everybody else is sober. It's wonderful because there's no pressure to do it. There's no, you know, and you just don't even think about it.
Yeah.
You just go through your day, you don't drink at all, you finish the show and you go to bed. Like, it's great.
Very present.
Yeah.
With what we're doing and each other and more importantly, our fans. Mm-hmm. Like, you are getting the actual real us and not like the drunken us. Like,
I think it's also quite mindful to be in the moment and
And it's not always easy. Let me go ahead and say that too. Because like sometimes, you know, we both struggle with anxiety. I think you and I have talked about this before, but sometimes it's difficult to be in big crowds of people. And sometimes it's hard to stay in your body or be social in a room where it feels like a lot of the crowd, especially in Europe, there's a lot of drinkers in those crowds. Yeah. And sometimes it's anxiety inducing. And it's like, oh gosh, I feel very exposed or vulnerable. Like, if I could just have a drink in this moment, I would relax. Like, there's also that challenge to it. Obviously we don't and wouldn't and couldn't, but that feeling doesn't go away either. Where it's just like, oh.
Yeah. My biggest challenge is a little different than that, in that if we have like a sizable crowd, where I would want to have a drink, is I always notice the one person that doesn't want to be there. You know what I mean? There are going to be 100 fucking people just going off, having a great time. And I am so focused on that one person that's like, God, this sucks. Like, that doesn't want to be there or just hates us. And like, it's just like, that's where I'm like, God, I need a shot. Like, you know, like, so I can focus on these. But it's been great to have to sober-minded go, stop, focus here on all these people who are here to be present in this moment. That person doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah.
Now, what bothers me is when those people always seem to want to stand up front. Like, why are you up front? Now go stand in the back and hate us. God, why are you up front? But it's that would be the time where I'm just like, yeah, I could, if I were drunk right now, I could just focus. Like, you know, I say that, but I wouldn't. Yeah. I would fight that person.
While you're saying, like, okay.
And it's also important what you said, for the fans, for the people who want to connect you. And sometimes it's for me so boring if bands, mostly white male bands, said come over and have a drink with us, and it's so boring. It's I don't want to get drunk with someone. I want to have a real exchange.
That's a power thing that I don't love that being blurred.
And also, like, it seems like when dudes get in bands, get drunk and party and bring it to the stage, that's all they want to talk about.
Yeah.
And I'm so drunk. This is woo, more beer. Give me a beer. Like, dude, come on. Like, is that what this is about for you? why are you doing it? Why are you here? Mm. Why is anybody spending their money on to pay for your party?
Yeah.
It's fucking dumb.
To see how someone gets more drunk from the first song to the end of the show.
Yeah. So it's just a mess at the end. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Then thank you so much. I have 4 quick questions.
Very quick answer.
Yeah. Just right from the good. which song has to be in the set list on your 2026 tour?
Oh, God.
From the new album?
Yeah, from the new album.
Oh, God.
Everyone.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Yeah, all of them. I'd honestly, like when we come to Europe especially, you're probably going to hear the whole album. I mean, you know, like, album. Yeah. Number one, it's not a long album. It's a 30-minute like album. We're not going to be able to get away with playing a 30. So it will be the full new album plus some old stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's just on.
That's a good deal, I think.
Yeah.
An album that blew you away this year.
I feel like I've been listening to a ton of that War on Women album.
Yeah.
Like for me, that's something that I've just been really into because I've liked all the styles that have been coming together out of it. That was like a sleeper and surprised me for sure.
I honestly can't think of anything off the cuff. I know there's stuff, I just can't think of anything where it was like, I get so caught up in writing, I forget to listen sometimes. And like, it just like,
I don't know. I think that's very intentional. Like, I can tell when you're in writing mode because you usually keep it very quiet, or like you don't listen to a lot of music when you're writing like intentionally so that you don't accidentally like influence.
I don't accidentally write the song I'm listening to.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a little bit purposeful.
It's not like you're forgetting. Yeah. No shade on new bands. I just haven't had the opportunity, and I would love to be able to get my brain back into listening to some new stuff. But I'm so intent on writing and getting this band going that it just like, I get lost in it sometimes.
Yeah, but I think it's very common that musicians through the writing process don't listen to music.
Yeah.
I heard it not the first time.
Yeah.
Okay. When you are looking forward to... when you're looking forward to the European tour in October, what do you appreciate? What do you want now in the future? what will you appreciate the most?
I know my answer to this. You have some? Okay. For me, I think that we've been through, for me and the band have been through a change of relationship with Europe, you know, especially Germany, where Boy Sets Fire was such a massive band there. And it was very hard for a lot of people to change over and to understand that I'm not going to be doing this band anymore. And this is my band. And it took a little while for people to get that, number one. Number two, to get people who, fair enough, didn't like this. They love Boy Sets Fire. And it's like, fair enough, high five, see y'all later. You know, that's going to happen. But then to see not just the crossover, but then new people who maybe didn't even care about Boy Sets Fire who are now into this band. It's cool to see the evolution, to see things change and see who stays with this, who doesn't, and respect all around. It is what it is. People like what they like. But also to see a new base of fans come up that maybe are just ours. And that's been really rewarding and cool to see that's even possible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I think a lot of times, when you're part of a band for so long and it gets such a massive following, you can get lost in that sometimes. And even fans will almost expect you to get lost in that and not allow you to move on and do new things and other things. So it's been nice. It's been nice. The people who have traveled along with us, and even the people who have been like, well, it was a good run. See ya. You know, it's has been good too. You know, I mean, I think that I needed that in a lot of ways. People to be like, I don't like this. I like that. Okay, cool. I need to learn how to be humble. Yeah. I need to learn how to accept that and to realize that this is for me, but it's not for everybody. And that's been sort of cool. So I look forward to what that next step looks like.
Yeah.
Yes. It's so interesting because like in the US we'll play shows. This would never happen in Europe, but we'll play shows in the US and like, it won't be until like months later where somebody will be, oh, I didn't realize you were in another.
Yeah, yeah.
And right. For me, like, that's amazing because that means that they loved us for us.
Yeah.
They loved us for the Iron Roses. Mm-hmm. We absolutely appreciate, obviously, the fans that have come to us through Matt's former band.
Yeah.
But it's always also nice to be known for us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the cool things about...
Nobody wants to be ex-members.
Right. One of the cool things about our evolution, like we were talking about in Europe, is that I feel like there are people who have been there. I don't feel like there have been people who have been with us since the beginning of our evolution, or, you know, coming from Voice Aspire to Solo Pride, the two Iron Roses. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've noticed a shift lately in people who were here because they did love you and they wanted, they supported us because they loved Nat. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to see a shift in where like, they're actually very passionate about the Iron Roses for the Iron Roses. Mm-hmm. Like they maybe started to give us the love and attention because they adored you. But now it's like starting to shift in a way where like, I think that it feels like they're like, oh shit, I actually like this.
Yeah.
Like, this is happening.
It's nice. Yeah. And
for me, that's been a big thing because, you know, standing next to Nat on a stage in Europe, especially, and asking people to also see me or to recognize that I'm also taking up space is very fucking intimidating. Mm-hmm. And it has gotten a lot less so because I have, you know, asserted my place a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And we have made sure to write so that I have that space too. And so I'm also kind of seeing that where I'm not just like at a merch table standing behind you while people talk to you. Like it's like we have become equals in a market that is very, has spent their lives with you. And for me, that's been very special. So and we'll continue to be.
And I also look forward to your European tour, especially to the German shows, to see you again. Okay. And one thing you will do in the next 48 hours for yourselves.
We're probably going to take a lot of baths.
Yeah, baths.
Like bath girls.
Naps.
We like bubble baths.
Bubble baths.
And popcorn.
Popcorn. Oh, I may eat some popcorn. I knew that about me.
We're very simple. I don't
need a lot. It's I get very excited when it's popcorn time.
Yeah.
It's
like, popcorn.
Yeah.
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 I mean, anytime that we just get to unhook a little bit and think about something other than what's the next step for the band? What are we doing with this? What's going on here? Is nice. And that's, like we said before, we're always looking for moments to do that. They're few and far between, but when you get to do them, it's nice. Yeah. But it's also nice to work. I like working. So,
But sometimes it's the little things, they help. And
Well, what's nice is when you work as hard as we do, there does come a point where you are gifted with the reality that either this isn't going to work and you get to relax because it's not going to fucking work, or it is going to work and it's going to start rolling downhill, you know, to where you don't have to be as present in the work all the time as you once had to be. You get to be in a place where it's like, well, I now can work as much as I want to or need to. It doesn't have to be this overwhelming all the time thing. So at some point, we're going to hit that spot where either the natural order of things is going to say, what am I doing?
I thought you were going to say that it's not going to work. I was like, don't even say
I know. You, as any band, you hit that mark. And I don't think it's going to be the previous. It's going to be the, oh, it's not going to work. We give up and just play on the weekends. I think it's going to be the other one. But every band gets gifted that opportunity, whether you see it as a gift or not, to give up or keep going. And either way, it provides a lot more vacation time.
Yeah.
Okay. We've reached the end, but there's always more to talk about with you two. Thank you for your music. Thank you for your words. Most of all, thank you for being yourselves openly and where it matters. You don't just make records. You help people feel less alone. You help a kid in a tough spot believe the world is bigger than their town. That's rare, that brave, and it matters. Molotov Nights come out on the August the 6th. Go listen, go pre-order. And Ned and Becky would say, turn your fury into fuel, but remember to recharge too. So this was the podcast with the Iron Roses with Ned and Becky. Thank you so much. This was the Metal.de podcast, Metal Minds, The Pit Unplugged. And I was Diana Heinbucher for Metal.de. Take care of yourselves and each other. See you in the pit.
Thank you.
Bye.